You're about to listen to the Complete Developer Podcast, the podcast by coders and for coders about all aspects of life as a developer.
I'm Will, the curmudgeonly experienced developer.
And I'm Beach, the optimistic newbie developer. Welcome to another episode of Complete Developer Podcast. Before we get started, Will, what have you been fighting this week?
A little bit of everything. We're actually doing a fairly major refactoring of some code at work. It finally got to the point where we had to deal with it. And that's been challenging because there's some old kind of ossified code that I'm having to go in and clean up. And some of the stuff, it kind of looks like somebody maybe didn't understand how HTTP worked as a web developer.
Makes perfect sense.
Not really. But
sarcasm.
Go with it. Yeah. So clean up some of that kind of stuff, trying to do a baseless merge on two parts of two code bases that diverged almost 2 years ago. It's just parts.
Okay.
But it's bad enough. And some of the merge also included some stored procedures and things like that. So yeah, it was it's challenging enough to keep me engaged. So it's working out pretty well. And then the other thing is I have been watching some unbelievable idiocy on Facebook again. And
really, what this time?
The encryption debate about how FBI said, oh, we need to have the ability to crack any iPhone, and Apple said go pee in a transformer.
Yeah,
where Apple's 100% right and the feds are 100% wrong. I've been watching people, and it's interesting because people, they don't think about what they do with their smartphones, and they also don't think about, they don't know about the implications of the security. So they think that, okay, it's just breaking into this one house. It's like, oh, we're going to search this house because, search and seizure, that makes sense, yada, yada. It's like, okay, well, we know right now somebody is making crack in a house in America. So let's kick down the doors of every house on the planet to catch that guy. That's effectively what they're asking for. And what's odd to me is it's the same people that most of the same people that are doing that are the same people that really, really focus heavily on other constitutional rights, get really wound up about that. But then, being secure in your person and your papers against unreasonable search and seizure, they're completely, they just don't understand it. So yeah, I've been watching all that, and in the meantime, I've just about gotten my blog ported over to Hexo. You saw that. The theme isn't great, but I haven't touched that yet.
It's looking good though, otherwise.
Yeah, everything else has been fairly fast. Switching stuff over to Markdown. There's been a few weird little things, like I don't like the way that you do images that are hyperlinks to another image in Markdown. That syntax just, I'm not real happy with it. But anyway, it's been a pretty good couple weeks.
That's cool.
So how about you? I know you're doing the job search thing.
Yeah. I want to start off with a shout out to the recruiter that I met with today. Hi, Hillary. She's going to be listening to the podcast. So had a good meeting with her. We talked about three different job opportunities that she has. What's really funny is after I left their office, I was on my way over to Starbucks and got a phone call from another random recruiter that I hadn't worked with before, offering me one of the same jobs that Hillary had put me in for. So I just politely told her, hey, thanks for the offer, but I've already put in for that job through, another recruiter.
So. Yeah, that's why I only typically work with one at a time, is because I have a hard time tracking multiple things like that. Plus, a lot of them won't tell you, what they've applied you for. And so somebody sees your resume come across their desk like five times, it makes you look desperate. And I want to control that. So
that makes sense.
Good that you stopped that ahead of that happening.
Well, yeah, I didn't want that. And
the other thing they do is if two recruiters submitted you and you come in for an interview, it may be easier for them to just go, well, we're not going to take this guy even though he's good, because the recruiters can both dispute it, and it's a mess.
Honestly, the recruiters I have been working with on my job search, none of them will submit my resume or anything until I approve it. And that's why I'm working with the ones I'm working with, because they all check with me first. I've got that, and I've been fighting WordPress lately.
Yeah, well, you know, that's why I'm switching to Hexo. Because I got tired of getting beat on.
Yeah, I'm kind of getting frustrated with it. It's not exactly WordPress that's the problem.
It's the plugins.
Well, it is WordPress that's the problem. The symptom is in Azure. I got a lot of attack attempts, and that raised me past my limit. Pay as you go, and I got a very hefty bill.
Yeah, that's one thing I've noticed, is that if you're not... You know, you can't really keep people from realizing that it's a WordPress site, which is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's automated systems that go out there and scan, and they find them, and they attempt attacks, and that is why I'm trying to get away from it myself. I have a client, I think he had, I want to say it was like 130,000 login attempts within an hour.
Good grief.
Yeah, and that hit my hosting plan. And, you know, thankfully, the company that, you know, does my hosting, which is, you know, shout out to Fluid Hosting here, they were okay with it. Like, they tracked it down. And what the guy actually did is he got in the Apache configuration file, whose name escapes me at the moment for some reason, got in there and basically said, hey, the login page doesn't exist anymore, you know, and just said, okay, your client's not going to be able to log in for the duration of the attack, which is completely fine.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the bots eventually go somewhere else, like all other parasites.
Yeah, I mean, it's been frustrating dealing with that, and that's why I'm kind of wanting to get away from WordPress. The thing is, WordPress does have its good sides. I mean, it's really good for people who may not be...
As tech savvy.
Yeah, as tech savvy to be able to have a blog.
Well, and it's good for, like, standing up a blog and going, okay, do I want to blog? It's nice. I use Visual Studio Code, and I can edit the markdown, and I can see side by side. I can do everything I got to do. I can script off the deployment. So, like, if I have, you know, the website in a particular state, I could have it push itself up there at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, and I could put a scheduled task on my server to pull it down, you know, from Git and do all that.
Speaking of Visual Studio Code, I recently had an issue with it. Everybody that's listened to the podcast for a while knows it's my favorite editor.
It's increasingly getting to be mine as well. Yeah.
And I had a recent issue with the spell checker extension. It's not
here
like
it comes.
A terrible issue. Well, I told you about it when it was going on. But it uses
an idiot's dictionary. Let's just be frank. I mean, what did it say? The word maintain is too complex. You should say keep up with or something like that.
I mean, that was the one example. That was the big one that just annoyed me, was I would use a term or a phrase, and it would say that it was too complex of an expression.
Yeah, which, you know, my thing about that is I don't write for idiots.
I mean, I was writing one post for our blog and then one for my own. And after, I think it was 2 weeks ago, I had a couple of typos, and so you asked me to start spell checking a little bit better, so I installed that, and this is the result.
Yeah, that's I don't know. I mean, that stuff is so hard to get right. I kind of feel for them, but at the same time, it's like, okay, did you have to get it wrong that way?
Trying to improve the quality of what I put out. I have been listening to the podcast dude. He's been podcasting for well, that particular show has been going on for a few months longer than ours. I think they're into the 30s on their episodes. And this is our 25th episode.
So basically, our 26th episode, our next episode will be the six-month anniversary. No, the one after that, because we did two, the first.
Yes.
So, wow. We need to get some single malt up in here.
That works for me.
All right. Well, I guess it's time to roll the music.
Let's roll that music and get into some IoTs. This week for IoTs, I have something kind of fun, especially for those of us that grew up in the 80s and 90s as sci-fi geeks. This is called the Single Q. It is a gesture control for the smart home or connected home. That allows you to control your smart home with gestures. it can have multiple ways of interacting, including voice, presence, and the gesture. And honestly, it kind of looks like a Kinect.
Huh.
Which, I mean, it's kind of got some of the same stuff as Kinect there. But it seems to be like a Kinect that's specifically designed for working with a smart home.
Yeah, because there's different protocols involved and all that kind of stuff, too. So mm-hmm. I guess it has to...
And just like the air quality one, this one's kind of expensive. It's around $200.
That's interesting. So we'll have a link in the show notes for that.
Yeah, we will. And there's a video you can watch on how to use it and stuff. It's a neat idea. A lot of these things that I've been doing recently have been more product than technology. And they're just kind of ideas for what can be done.
In this episode, we'll discuss lesser known uses for feature flags. But first, I think probably ought to explain what a feature flag actually is.
I have a quote from, Ross Harmes? Flags allow us to restrict features to certain environments while still using the same code base on all servers. They're used by a lot of different companies. Like I found a list of just some of the big names like Flickr, Discus, Etsy, Reddit, Gmail, and Netflix.
Yeah, and they're also used a lot by smaller vendors. In fact, this morning I was listening to Startups for the Rest of Us, which is one of my favorite podcasts. And this was episode 274. So if you go look at startupsfortherestofus.com, and he's talking about how to mentally and technically prepare for a launch. So like in this case, they own the guy that runs it owns a email program called Drip. It's kind of like MailChimp, but it's hardcore. MailChimp is for more simple cases, and this Drip is more for it'll do what MailChimp will do, but it does all the marketing automation and just really crazy stuff. It's much more built out. But anyway, they released a new feature, and it was a workflow feature, and basically what they had done with their feature flags is they had this feature built in, but turned off, except for certain clients who were able to preview it. And basically what this did is this allowed them to slowly, roll out to a test group. It allowed them to have that code live on the server so they could look for any performance issues as a result of changes made by that code before it was actually released to everybody and their mother. And they were able to test, like I said, with a small subset of beta users and, get feedback and all that stuff without affecting their main site and without messing things up. Because those users were the sort that they're like, okay, well, I like this feature and I want to use it. And, so if I spend the time to beta test it, I want that to roll into live. And so that gets them out of the whole thing of having to try to pull stuff from QA and shove it over to live. And so it actually worked out pretty well for them and made it a lot less painful for the release.
Yeah, that's...
And
actually, that gets right into the next thing on describing feature flags, which are the different types of them. There's basically two types. There's the release toggles for exactly what you were saying, and then there's also business toggles to kind of restrict user access in more of a long-term scenario.
Yeah, and I mean, they kind of used both of these because, the features, there were some things I think that probably were not turned on fully, and that was more of their continuous deployment type setup. I don't know if they actually have a continuous. They probably have, a regular cadence of releases, because continual deployment is not really it's not as big of a thing as a lot of the tech press makes you want to believe it is, because it's hard. But they did have flags turned on and off per client, and we used to do this at a place I used to work as well. And that's how we would roll out brand new features, and we could kind of test them and make sure make sure everything worked and get the feedback. It's a nice way to scale, so you don't have to worry about a new feature just destroying your infrastructure. At the same time as everybody's asking all these questions about the new stuff and trying to find things on the site, like that makes a perfect storm for support. And so that's why people really like these.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. One more quote, and we'll get into the meat of the episode, so to speak. This one's from Martin Fowler, from his blog post on feature flags. And it states, the basic idea is to have a configuration file that defines a bunch of toggles for various features you have pending. The running application then uses these toggles in order to decide whether or not to show the new feature.
Yeah, and I would add to this, because it's not always a configuration file. We used a database, and we had client specific settings for turning stuff on and off. And there's, we'll get into it in a minute, but there's a difference between the release toggles and the business toggles, because the business toggles tend to stay in there because it's based off of like what plan on the software somebody has or what features they have turned on or off, whereas the release toggles are supposed to be temporary. Because you got to bear in mind, for each of these, you're basically putting an if statement in saying, okay, if this is tripped, then go down this branch. And if it's not something that you want to keep around, you really don't want to keep it around, because you have a combinatorial explosion in possible configurations. And yeah, and then your QA people hate you, and then they get even. So
all right, so number one for lesser known uses is feature flags. They can be more than just Boolean statements. Their state can be set statically or dynamically. You can even use rule-based toggles. You mentioned with if statements, more than just true or false, but you can use XML, YAML, or JSON to define those.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't really do that very much, because most of our stuff was, on or off. But I can definitely see that, in larger systems or systems, especially stuff that's got a lot of workflow type steps in there. Like, you may be adding a step and it needs configuration as well as the toggle flag.
Yeah.
And so you've got a bit and then a payload going in there. But I've never had to do that, thankfully. of course, the other case is enabling or disabling features for specific users. And, this can be anything from, like opt-in type setups to, blocking and unblocking users. I mean, some of this gets into user profile stuff a little bit more than, an actual feature toggle, although we call it different things, but it kind of works out to be the same thing.
Well, a really cool example that I have for opt-in is with my Xbox Live Gold account. I'm also an Xbox ambassador, and was given the option to opt in for previews of new features that they're going to add. And each time a new feature comes out, I have the option of putting that on, or basically it's already in the update, but activating it. It's really neat, because you can turn that off and basically roll it back to what your system was before. But it's neat because I get to do things that most Xbox users don't, just because I've signed up for that and I have the option. If I don't want to, or if I'm not on my Xbox for a while and I don't get on there and click yes, it doesn't opt me in automatically, which I like that.
Yeah, that helps a lot. I mean, it's almost, this is one of those things that comes with the whole, kind of users and roles set up as well. So for instance, if you've got a paywall in your app, like if you have a free version of the app and then you have a, paid version, so you're doing the freemium model, you might turn, toggles on or off based on whether the user is paid or not, or what plan they're in. And so this is where the non-Boolean things get in, because like if you have, a maximum number of, whatever they, the user can do, like, I don't know, like MailChimp, there's a certain number of emails you can send for free and a certain list size you can have for free. And then when you get above that, that's a feature toggle that they essentially have set up there to say, okay, well, when you're paying, we're more than happy to let you send even more emails, but until you are, you got a limit.
That's the same with our with the CDN that we use for our podcast, it's we get so much space for what we pay. And if we need to increase because we have 5 weeks in a month or something and we go over that, we're able to increase that. And it's pretty much a feature flag because, you know, when you go on there and you approve them charging more for that month, then it automatically allows us to have that.
And not having it allows us to have the nag warning emails as well.
Exactly.
So, you know, feature flags also work in reverse. It's kind of like tracer bullets.
You know, I actually read that in doing the research for this, a comparison of feature flags to tracer bullets.
Yeah. Well, and they can be a problem, and we're going to get into that here in a little bit. They can also kind of demarcate between new users and expert users. So until somebody – it's kind of like unlocking achievements. I mean, those are feature toggles in your games. You're playing a video game. I mean, that's the same thing. It's, you know, stuck on your user profile, and it's built into the game, and it's not going away. But, you know, that's a feature
toggle. I was also thinking about some of the forums that I've been on. They don't allow – comments or something until you've had so many posts and stuff like that. Like, you have to be a certain level user to do certain things. That's what I was thinking about that too. Yeah. When I was,
that's one way to implement it.
The next lesser known use is something we've kind of already hit on a little bit. It's a trial of new features. I know I talked about that with my Xbox, but you could also run A/B tests.
Well, and the A/B test thing is very, very important and useful anyway, because it's not just, you know, you want to be able to split test certain things, and you want something that's persistent. So, like, you don't want it to be, okay, you load the page and now you're in group A, and then, you know, you refresh and now you're in group B, or you navigate to another one, because then that screws up all the stats. And so having that in a single repository actually really makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that does make perfect sense.
You know, that can kind of be used as a, you know, non-Boolean, test, because a lot of times what you're doing is you have the way whatever feature is, and then you've got two options that you're trying to get to, or 10 options. And, you know, they've got to pick, you know, one out of a list, or, you know, that they want to put you into for testing purposes. Another thing I've also seen is they'll look at feature utilization. And so, like, if you use a feature, they'll set a bit. And if you haven't used the feature, the bit doesn't get set, and so they have something in the background that looks and says, okay, this dude hasn't done X with this app, so let's send him instructions on how to do it so that you can drive user engagement into new features.
Yeah, that's something I hadn't thought about, but I was thinking more from the testing end of looking at how many people are using a certain feature, and if they're not, then maybe if there's not a lot, then focusing on a different area. But I like that. That's a neat idea.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is to keep from having churn and turnover. You might have a flag set for, okay, they're a user that's, you know, less than 30 days old. So you could have, you could have a batch job at night turning the flag on or off depending on different criteria, and they haven't used, the new workflow feature. To use startups, the rest of us. Use their example, or use Drip's example rather, and because they haven't used that new feature and their account is less than 30 days old, you don't want them to basically bail on the service. So what you do is you set it up and just go, okay, well, if they haven't used it, then I'm going to send them an email and follow up with it. That's basically a feature that you're turning on. You're saying, okay, I'm basically bringing the knowledge base into the app. It's now part of the app, and I'm pitching stuff at them to get them to participate so that they don't leave the app. Because the purpose of the app for the user is to save the user money or get something done. The purpose of the app for the developer or for whoever owns it is to make money.
Yeah, that's why I don't allow push notifications on almost every app I have on my phone. Because they're really annoying.
Yeah, well, that and the battery. But I mean, that's the idea. That's, you know, that's why they do that sort of thing. And of course, the other thing is early access too, right? Because you do not, like, especially if you have an app with, you know, 10,000 or 100,000 or, you know, several million users, you don't want to roll something out live to everybody and their mother. At one of the companies I worked for, we did content systems for news stations. And, you know, we might roll something out to one news station out of 300 or something. I forget how many we had. We had some, you know, just ridiculous, you know, ridiculously high number. And, you know, some of the features were only used when there was inclement weather. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously you don't want to turn that on for everybody because, like, let's say that, you know, it's a feature that's affected, you know, that gets used when there's snow and we have snow hit the southeast or tornadoes hit the southeast or something, you know, where everybody gets their camera out and takes pictures. You know, you don't want that feature turned on for, you know, 50 million people when you're not sure what it's going to do to the server. Mm-hmm. Yet.
That makes good sense. You kind of pick a few areas to test it out in to see how it affects the server.
Yeah, and that's actually what they did with the first project I did for them, because I did a Google Maps integration, and we just turned it on for one of the local news stations. I forget which one, and it was supposed to be, you know, report, you know, if there's basically storm damage and, you know, flooding and, you know, trees down, that kind of stuff, and they could put it on a map. You know, not that big a deal. And we said, hey, we'll test this in Nashville because nothing ever happens in Nashville, yeah. Right? That was Thursday. Saturday was the Great Nashville Flood.
Yeah. You know, back then I was working in the emergency room as a psych tech EMT, and I had to work that weekend. I remember the big ice storm right before that. I had to work that weekend too. It's like every time a big thing happened that whole year, I was working.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, that's why you do kind of a slow rollout, because if something big is happening, you don't want to be part of it.
I don't remember if, you know? If you told me about that or if I heard about it from somebody else, but I know several people that used that.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the thing is, that thing was, it actually worked. And so I got the call that, hey, you know, it held up to this. And you go and look, and as you could zoom in as close as you could on the Google map, and you couldn't see anything. All you could see was pins.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. And I was actually, you know, I mean, I guess it's okay to admit this at this point, but I was a little bit shocked that it actually held up, because I would have thought, you know, something would have blown up by that point, but it didn't.
Yeah, that's true.
But we didn't know that. And, you know, it's one thing for, you know, Nashville, but, you know, sometimes they would have stuff where, I mean, they would have crazy stuff happen. Like we had that outbreak of tornadoes that went across the South. What was that? I think it was 2012.
And yeah. Cause I was in school in Mississippi.
Yeah. And it hit everything. And I think that was the day that we had a quarter of a record month's traffic in one day.
I can believe it.
Yeah. And so that's bad enough with something that you know is stable and you're comfortable with, because all kinds of weird things happen at scale anyway. But if you can imagine what that feels like, rolling out and, you know, having rolled out a new feature to everybody and that happens.
Oh, that would be scary.
That's not and it was still pretty rough. Like we found all kinds of things in the system that were not, you know, not where we wanted to be at that scale. They worked perfectly everywhere else, but when it scaled up like that, it was just, it's a completely different world.
Getting back on point, the next thing we have is feature flags can be used for internal review of features.
Yeah, and what this means is actually testing in production by members of your QA team, because most places, like if they have multiple clients in the same, you know, the same software as a service setup, you know, and they don't shard their database per client, they'll actually have a fake client in there that they use for testing, or several of them. And so what they'll do is that when they roll that new feature out, they actually go and test it in production with the production systems and make sure things work end to end before they start turning it on for the beta users, because that gives a bad impression.
Yeah, that makes sense. I know I found GitHub has a staff mode. Of course, GitHub's kind of neat. When you work there, you have to make
make a commit your first day, which I think that's kind of cool and kind of scary too.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can commit just about anything, you know, as long as nobody does the, nobody actually takes the pull
request.
That's
true. That's true.
I'd be a little jittery about that, you know, that idea, but you know, whatever they want to do.
Yeah, and then you can also use them for scalable rollouts. And we've kind of
Which is what we were discussing before, you know, with the whole phase thing. And yeah, that's a real lifesaver. And, you know, going back to the whole scalability thing, scaling is weird. Like, for instance, an ant can lift 50 times its body weight, you know, at its size. But if an ant was our size, its own body weight would break its own legs. And so things just get really distorted at scale. You know, one system is very, you know, slightly slower, and there's a backup in a queue, and all of a sudden something that used to be instant takes 24 hours, and you don't know why.
I can see that, especially it's like that with a lot of different things, but you can use feature flags to phase the rollouts and kind of help prevent scalability issues, or at least catch them early.
Yeah, catch them before they do any damage is the main thing. So you can kind of watch and see how it's, you know, affecting load on the system and those sorts of things. And, you know, sometimes stuff, you can also use feature flags for this kind of thing to restrict time windows that people can do things. So you may not do it by user. You may do it by what time of day it is. And, you know, sometimes that can actually help.
Well, I think in one of your previous tricks of the trade, you mentioned something was it f.lux that dims your screen based on time of day? I mean, I don't know if that's using feature flags or not, but
yeah, but like you could actually have a feature that says, okay, I'm only going to let the users, you know, like let emails go out at certain times a day if you're in a certain plan.
Or like WordPress, I've got a lot of experience there for some unknown reason, maybe because our site's hosted on WordPress or whatever. With WordPress, they have a feature where you can turn off the admin.
Yeah, during certain times of day. And, you know, that can come in really handy. So another thing that feature flags will do for you is they can enable maintenance. So you could turn certain features off if you're trying to, you know, if you're trying to work on that part of the system. We had this, you know, at a former employer, but we had actually separate services. So we had the whole service-oriented architecture, but you could do this without that. It was just, you know, that's what we already had, so we didn't build this for the most part. But you could have it where you have a kill switch that says, hey, you know, I don't want to send out any emails right now. And I could set the kill switch, and it would stop sending emails, and they would just queue up. That helped a lot, like if our email service provider was down. Like, we had some issues with SendGrid at one point, and being able to turn that off was really helpful, because the thing is like when it would send emails, if it failed a certain number of times, the email would go into a dead letter queue, and then it was, you know, it was a pain to get out. And so it was easier just to shut off the spigot, essentially, and say, okay, well, no emails go out until we know they're back up. And then, of course, we carpet bomb them with all the emails that have queued up during that time, and they may go down again. But that's their problem.
Yeah.
But
Finally on the list, we have sunset old features, which, we've kind of – all of these kind of interrelate, and so we've talked about this a little bit in some of the other ones.
Yeah, and one of the ways you do that with sunsetting the old features is when a new account gets created, the flag is set to off for those old features, and you gradually start trying to move your clients away from things and go, okay, well, you know, we're gonna help you convert, you know, depending on how high dollar your software is, that can be a good way to get rid of features. And, you know, people don't really think about this a lot, but a feature is a liability. If you know, 0.1% of your users actually use it, and that feature's sitting out there, what ends up happening is that feature doesn't get the attention in QA. It doesn't get, you know, all the other love and care that a feature needs. And what will end up happening is it tends to be a source of breaks on, you know, on random occasions when it gets used, or, you know, it becomes a security issue, or just, you know, performance problems, those kind of things. And you know, occasionally you'll get one that's just a pain where, you know, you've got some small subset of the population that uses that feature, and you know, they only use it occasionally, and then they contact your support staff and they can't get any help because your support people don't know either, because you know, they never deal with that problem. And so sometimes it's better just to kill the old features, as bad as that, you know, as bad as that sounds. I mean, Windows is kind of has kind of done that to some degree as well. I mean, they've, you know, there's things that have actually died off. Maybe not nearly enough, but you know that.
And sometimes that can cause breaking changes that can be issues, and so that's jumping a little bit ahead. So
well, and you want to well, I mean, the thing is this is, you know, it's a phased roll out. And then it's a phased roll in, right? So you want to start taking that feature back up when it's not really being used or it's not useful anymore for whatever reason, and you just kind of want to slowly back off of it instead of cutting it off and then, you know, ticking off your entire user base.
That has happened.
Yeah, so some tips for feature flags. One thing is to have a minimum presence of tests to ensure that a feature is properly hidden. Like if you've got features that are just for a particular plan or a particular level of user, security role, or just, you know, toggled on and off, you want to make sure that flag stays working. In many cases, you want to have some kind of automated test because that's real easy to break, and you're not going to – it's not something that it actually blows up. It just shows something it shouldn't.
Yeah.
And that's a really good place for automated tests that, you know, if you're not going to put them anywhere else, this isn't a bad spot. Another thing is you want, you know, in this, you want to focus on the entry points. So like as you get into a particular workflow, like set that toggle flag, as you go into the workflow, don't be checking it the whole way through. Right. So you set it somewhere like in, you might stick it in the session or something along those lines and then check that value instead of doing, you know, checking the flipped bit, because what will happen is if the user is progressing through a workflow and you flip that bit while they're doing it, that's bad things can happen.
Yeah. I mean, and really with this, if creating and maintaining toggle points takes a significant amount of time, you have too many toggle tests.
Yeah. I mean, some of this can be, you know, features, you know, for, you know, different plan settings, and that's, you know, kind of part of the app. But if it's something that's not providing added business value for you to be having this, then don't do it. Like, start backing off of it, you know, get rid of some of those toggles. This is especially true when you want to sunset certain toggle switches because they're always on. It's like, get that crap out of the code. If it's always true, don't evaluate whether it's true or false because it's always true.
Well, it's also like when you're creating the toggle points, you want to look at, all right, we mentioned freemium accounts earlier. You know, let's say you have you have a service that is freemium. You've got free users and you've got various levels of pay that they get different things. Well, set the toggle point at, say, login, and it toggles them and gives them access to whatever, and you don't have to check that with each individual feature.
Yeah, I'm to some degree that's okay. It depends on how long-lived your sessions are. Because, I mean, if they can stay logged in for 4 days, then you can't shut stuff off. And that can kind of hurt. But, you know, as far as like, you know, within a particular workflow, so like if they're doing a unit of work, the toggle flag should not change during that unit of work. As a rule. So like if they're going through a wizard to build something, you know, it should stay the same throughout that. Because you don't want the variability of, well, what if it changes in between step two and step three and it's 15 steps and you got to check each of those places? That's awful. So, you know, you want to, you know, constant value all the way through.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't, you know, when doing my research on this, I hadn't really thought about that. So,
yeah, well, it's one of those things where the guy that has touched the electric fence knows about the shock. Another thing you want to avoid too is having a pile of different toggles that nobody knows how to use, you know, because you can have dead flags all over the place, and you know, all the checks for it, because what ends up happening is people stop checking. And so you write code where if this toggle does get flipped, it's, you know, the app is now in an inconsistent state because stuff that it's expecting to be there isn't there because it's partially implemented. So you got to be real careful about making sure that they're implemented everywhere they're supposed to be and that that's a minimum number of places. So they, you know, the size of a thing that's getting toggled, it shouldn't be across the entire app. It should be like two pages.
Next, you want to make release toggles kind of your last option. It's best to break features down to introduce parts of it into the product.
When you can, yes. Like I said, you don't want big toggles, but I would say that this is probably the best way to release a new feature if you're doing anything at any kind of scale. I mean, obviously, if you're not, then, you know, whatever. Because, I mean, if you've got two users and that's all you're ever going to have, you can hard code it. I can say if user equal beach. Now, that's kind of dumb and it's awful, but it will work.
Well,
right. I mean, that's not a real good way to do things.
It's I will say this for the other junior developers out there. When I first started learning, I wanted to abstract as much stuff as I could. And what I learned kind of the hard way, so to speak, is that I was trying to learn how to do something, and it was easier to not worry about the abstraction until after I'd figured out how to do what I was trying to do. So hard coding it in my learning process, and then going back and abstracting things out. It worked better for me for learning. I do not think that would be healthy in a production code.
Yeah. So, I mean, I like release feature flags. I like them a lot, just because of what they offer as far as when things are starting to scale, or when you have a varied audience and you don't want to get hit with all the problems all at once or have, you know, systems go down. So I wouldn't say that they are your last choice, but you know, they should be, you know, I guess they should be used with caution. And they should be granular. Like, they don't need to overlap, and they don't need to be too big.
Yeah, I think that's really that comes from the Martin Fowler blog post that I read, and I may have not conveyed what he was saying as well as he did in the notes that I took on it. But that's the general idea that I got from reading the post. So
yeah, and. Like I said, you know, you got to break it down, you know, to small parts. Testing is always an issue, and you want to reduce the area that you have to test, but you do want to test. And so it's that balancing act that you got to figure out where the balance point is. Because if it was, like, for instance, if it was me and you developing a software product, it's just the two of us, we're both coders. So we're going to err towards the side of less support. And, you know, slowly rolling stuff out. Whereas somebody that's, you know, got, you know, three or four support guys and one developer, they're going to err towards the side of not monopolizing that developer's time. So it's an economic decision based on scarcity of resources.
That makes sense. I
like everything else.
I know a few weeks back I talked about interviewing, and in one of the interviews that I had been in, we had someone from QA there that her question was, have you ever worked on a project with QA and what do you know about it? And I was honest. I just said, no, I haven't really. It's everything I've really worked on has been, with another developer. And yeah, if I don't know something or don't know about something, saying that, I'll get an explanation of what it is and respect for being honest about not knowing it. And I think that only goes so far. I mean, if you don't know anything or know very little, then
yeah, it's real easy to go from honest to quaint to cute to not credible.
Yes. Yes.
And you know, the bottom three of those are pretty awful for job hiring prospects. But anyway, you know, the main thing with release toggles is they're short lived. Like, you only use them as long as you need them.
Yes.
And the idea is to release with a minimal level of risk and, you know, to get rid of that risk once, you know, once it's served its purpose, you know, get it out of there and completely remove it. Like, you know, if you're going to use a feature toggle, allocate the time to get rid of it once the thing is live. Like, you don't want that thing in there 6 months from now causing some kind of random problem. And I've been on projects that you know, actually one place I worked that, you know, we used release flags all the time, and a lot of them hung around for quite a while because we had per client settings and that's where they were stored, which sounds, you know, great and all that until you realize that we have a wrapper that's generated around the database table where those things are stored. And if something's in the table, it has to have a property on that wrapper, which means that to remove the feature flag, we've actually got to write a script that goes and blows that away out of the database and gets it gone completely. And so stuff tended to stick around a little bit longer than needed. And every so often you'd get these weird one-off errors because, you know, some flag got set wrong, or, you know, something happened and, or, you know, it wasn't cleared or whatever, and it didn't match, you know, their plan or, and so, you know, getting rid of those as quickly as possible is definitely a win.
Now, on the opposite side of that, we're getting into the next set here of dangers of feature flags is accidental exposure to features that are still in development.
Yeah, or admin features. There's been some websites that have, you know, they've done things where a regular user could log in and then they have admin control over the system because somebody forgot to put a check in there and they rolled something out. Of course, these get rolled back pretty quick because, you know, they start to realize that, hey, there's somebody deleting accounts or, you know, but you really don't want to be there. And, you know, so that accidental exposure can be an issue. It can also be an issue, for instance, if you have a new feature and you want to release it and not have a big splash in the market before it hits and it's stable, like you're trying to get ahead of your competition, because your competition, when you get to a certain size, they're going to have accounts on your system, you know, through, you know, friend of a friend type deal that, you know, tells them what's going on. Like that corporate espionage thing happens. And so you want to be somewhat careful about that because you could accidentally expose what's effectively trade secrets.
Yeah, and that's something that happens across the board. I was asked by the director of the preschool I used to work at in college to call one of the other preschools in town and request a price quote. Just is basically kind of corporate espionage, and I was like, I don't know about this. It didn't seem that unethical to do that because that's, I mean, price quote.
Yeah, the prices are open. It'd be the same as going to their website. But I mean, it, you know, that can be an issue. It can also be an issue if you just accidentally expose it and a bunch of people click on it, and it turns out that, oh hey, this thing's not stable. You know, that can burn you pretty quick. Another thing that happens is corrupted data. So you've got a new feature that's in development and you have used a feature toggle to keep it from actually being used in production, but the code is out there. If you screw that up and somebody gets in there, you know, if that feature doesn't work, it may put data into a bad state in the system. And that, you know, that's a legitimate risk. So you have to be somewhat conscientious. I mean, a good branching and merging strategy will keep this from being as much of a problem, because you don't want the feature to really go in there with its feature toggle until it's baked well enough to actually, you know, try on a production server.
Makes sense. And finally, under the dangers, we have what you mentioned when I first proposed this episode, is feature flags do cause technical debt. And we mentioned it before with making sure you completely remove your release toggles.
Yeah, and this is actually one of the places where the term technical debt makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
I have significant issues with it because it's really it's almost a margin call most of the time when people are actually doing technical debt. Like, debt is something where you borrow money from the bank for growth. Like, I can't get a loan from the bank to go buy lottery tickets. I can't get a loan from the bank to, you know, stock my liquor cabinet. And the reason is because those things don't produce growth. The bank has no notion that you're going to make money off of that.
Unless you're a bar and be
able to pay them back the loan, right? And so most of what is called technical debt is actually not technical debt. It's gambling. It's taking out a loan to gamble. So it's, you know, it's an unsecured, you know, it's a little bit more dangerous. It's like margin trading with borrowed money most of the time when there's technical debt. It's not debt. It's something else. This is debt because you're turning a feature on so that you can get a benefit from it. And that benefit is not, you know, just a quick, you know, quick little thing. It's actually a survival and growth thing. So this is the rare case where I'm like, yeah, this is actually technical debt per what both of those words actually mean.
Yeah. So to review what we've covered this episode, we started off talking about the difference between release versus business toggles, and kind of where you would use each of those and the different uses for each and how release toggles are short-lived, whereas business toggles are more long-lived and you want to design those differently. Then we got into enabling features for specific users and also talked about rollouts, scalable rollouts, and is it roll-ins, roll-backs?
Roll-backs, I guess. You know, it's sunsetting. I mean, yeah. However you want to call it. Yeah.
You know, we kind of covered using feature flags for maintenance and sunsetting old features, rolling them back out. Then we hit on some tips and tricks quickly to review those. You want kind of a minimum presence of toggle tests kind of to help ensure that the feature is properly hidden. Definitely want to retire your toggles once the feature has been fully added for release toggles. We kind of talked about a little controversial issue on whether or not a release toggle should be at the forefront of your thought process and kind of how you're designing and building. And then covered how they need to be, release toggles specifically need to be short-lived. And finally, we just finished covering some of the dangers of feature flags, such as accidental exposure, corrupting data via new features that are in development, and the technical debt that, as Will pointed out, is actually the correct term to use here. That pretty much wraps it up for us. So before we close out, Will, what do you have for us this week for Tricks of the Trade?
I kind of want to somewhat shift the focus of Tricks of the Trade a little bit and offer a little short, opinionated mini rant, as it were. And so the one for this week is I want to point out a thought process that I think is maybe a little bit wrong. And maybe if you shift your focus a little bit on it, it will help you out. That's the idea that you have to have more than one reason to do something. So, for instance, if you go, okay, I want to go to dinner at this place, right? Just, you know, and this works for code too. Well, why? Well, because the tacos are good. That's a reason to go. Whereas if you go, oh, well, you know, the music's good and the tacos are good and, you know, my best friend's there and, you know, the beer's free and da-da-da, and you're starting to give all these reasons. A lot of times when you're coming up with multiple reasons to do things, it's not because there's multiple good reasons. It's because there isn't a good reason. You know, this is just something I've kind of noticed in myself a lot, is that when I'm doing things and coming up with this litany of reasons to do it, that I tend to be wrong a lot.
Sometimes it's almost like you're trying to convince yourself of.
That's exactly what it is. And so I just kind of want to throw that out there. That's, I don't know, that's kind of an experience thing maybe, or I don't know if it's a maturity thing or just a lack of self-trust, but it's if you're coming up with a whole bunch of reasons to do something, sit back and think for a minute and make sure that you're not trying to come up with excuses to do it rather than a good solid reason. Because if the reason, if one reason is good enough, you know, that is probably proof that it actually is, you know, solid, you know, barring it being, you know, stupid in some other sense. So just something I want to throw out there as a little opinion piece. If you have a question or comment for us, please email us at neckbeards@completedeveloperpodcast.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from Stand By for Titanfall by Pure Bells, available on SoundCloud and licensed under Creative Commons. The intro music for IoTs is Hillbilly Hip Hop by Jason Belcher. For references, show notes, and to sign up to our email list, be sure and check out the website at www.completedeveloperpodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at @CompleteDevPod and like our page on Facebook to keep up with news about the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time.